Hello, I'm Alex Shabbat. This is number 0124, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Older, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Older.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0124. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll hear from therapist Richard Rappaport, who talks about dealing with vets returning from battle.
They pretty much realize that whoever they'll speak to will have no sense, no idea of what they experienced. And all too often, the kinds of questions that come up are very coarse kinds of questions, often asking just out of the blue, well, did you kill anybody? Which would be a shocking question to ask in general, but specific to the soldier's mandate. There's no soldier that I've ever met or that I know of that could take any pleasure in having to be violent. The type of reception that soldiers get all too often leads them to kind of isolate themselves or just to keep quiet or, in fact, not to relive some of the memories.
Miles Rhinus is from TribbleToys.com, plush little creatures from Star Trek fame. Just how many different Tribbles are available?
We have 9 different breeds right now. Our original assortment were the Desert Tribble, like a cinnamon color, a Meadow Tribble, which is like a cream color, a Tundra Tribble, which is a gray color, and a Cave Tribble, which is a dark brown color. Then we released 2 years ago the Gas Tribble, which is a genetically altered Safe Tribble, seen in the Star Trek animated episode. It's all pink. And then this year, while exploring the Tribble homeworld, we came across 4 new jungle breeds of Tribbles.
And Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Peter occasionally fights for the little guy, like the Rolex Deli in New York that's being sued by a certain watch company.
If you go to my website, which is Gabby.com this week, there's a picture of the Rolex Delicatessen, and I want you all to hang it on the door of your refrigerator, and I want every one of your millions of listeners to order a pastrami sandwich from them as a protest against Rolex.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0124, is Alex Shabbat, who is a freelance cameraman at Global Montreal, right here in Montreal, the other place that I work. And I thank you very much, Alex, for taking the time to be the guest later on this edition of the Stuff File program. Now, on with the show. We have lots and lots and lots of stuff, as I mentioned. And you know, you've no doubt heard that people are seeing the face of Jesus everywhere, and not just on his birthday, which just passed, which is Christmas, of course, but they're seeing it in toast all over the place. Well, now a U.S. company has created a toaster that creates an image of Jesus with every single slice. Vernon-based Burnt Impressions created the Jesus Toaster, which is on sale for $34.95. Creator Galen DeVille came up with the idea after reports of people seeing apparitions of Jesus in slices of toast and other inanimate objects. The response to our toasters this Christmas season has been awesome. I was a short order cook, and I have never been swamped this way before, he said. We have called in family and friends who work around the clock to process the mountains of order. The company also puts out a Virgin Mary toaster, a peace sign model, and also a pot leaf design for those potheads out there. I'm just going out on a limb, and I'm guessing that there won't be a Muslim version with Muhammad on toast. Yeah, that would be a safe bet. Meanwhile, most people have had a bathroom accident at some time, but it probably didn't involve a gun. A Connecticut man has been hospitalized on Christmas Eve after accidentally shooting himself while on the toilet. Daryl Johnson, age 51, originally told police he'd been shot during an attempted robbery, but later changed his story. Johnson, who has a criminal record, had recently gotten his hands on a small caliber revolver for, quote, personal protection, and had forgotten he moved the gun from his pocket to the waistband of his pants. The gun fell, hit the toilet, and went off, shooting Johnson in the leg. Bet that scared the crap out of him. Well, at least he was in the right place for that. And Armando Cardenas, age 45, was angry at his ex-girlfriend, so he allegedly went to her Stock Island, Florida apartment complex, broke in, and ransacked the place. Now, according to investigators, he helped himself to alcoholic beverages, went through the woman's drawers for cash and medications, and tried to pry a flat-screen television from its mount. He then fell asleep on the floor, where he remained until his ex-girlfriend's neighbor came home, discovered him, and called the police. You see, Cardenas had broken into the wrong apartment. This might have something to do with why she's an ex-girlfriend. Anyway, the first step to recovery is to admit you have a problem. You don't have to bring physical evidence. That's not necessary. A very intoxicated man who was carrying a beer crashed an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Cincinnati, Ohio, and refused to leave. Darren Porter, age 45, showed up drunk at the 12-step house at 12:15 a.m. and wandered the hallways, interrupting a meeting. Employees escorted Porter out of the facility, but he allegedly returned. When police arrived, the suspect declined to answer officers' questions and demanded to know their names and social security numbers. Police claim they detected a strong odor of alcohol on the suspect's breath and took him into custody. Porter has been charged with disorderly conduct while intoxicated and obstructing official business. A 12-step house is really someplace you shouldn't be staggering on the steps. That's all I'm saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, when police pulled over Daniel Thomas, age 19, yeah, Danny Thomas, that would be his name, in Illinois, he bolted and ran into a nearby cornfield. Now, after unsuccessfully trying to locate him in the field using dogs and an airplane, they came up with a better strategy. Let's find out who the farmer is and see if he's ready to harvest his field, said Chief Deputy Ken McCabe. The farmer, Mark Tanner, was indeed ready and clad in a bulletproof vest. He started up his combine and started harvesting, with two armed officers riding along. After about 90 minutes, Thomas finally ran out of the field, hands up, directly in front of the sheriff's office. It's nice of him to run toward the jail, McCabe said. Usually people run from the jail. Thomas is being held on a parole violation, as well as charges of resisting a peace officer, fleeing, and attempting to elude police. I always love an ingenious cop story like that one. Warms my heart. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Both Canada and the U.S. are seeing military personnel coming home. 2011 marked the end of battle for the Canadian troops in Afghanistan. For the Americans, it was the end of the war in Iraq. But what does it mean for those who are actually returning? On the line with us right now is Richard Rappaport. He's a Montreal-based therapist who specializes in many fields, sex and couple therapy, addiction, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Peter.
It's been a while since we had a chance to talk. We used to talk on the old radio show on a regular basis on a program we called Shrink Wrap back in the day.
That's right, Peter. I have many, many fond memories.
And I just wanted to bring up this whole idea with so many vets coming home, because I know you spent over 30 years working in this field and dealing with veterans over the years, so I thought your insight would be very handy here. It just so happens that last week on this program, I had a chance to talk to a fellow by the name of Ivan J. Houston, who is the author of Black Warriors, The Buffalo Soldiers of World War II, of which he was one of them. And I asked him a question that so many people often bring up, and that is the fact that so many vets come back from wars, doesn't make a difference which war it is, from World War I up until any of the current situations that have taken place in history. And most of the time, vets don't want to talk about their experiences in the theater of battle. Do you find that still the same?
Well, you know, I think... whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq or Vietnam or even Korea,
all of which I've had the opportunity to work with veterans of those wars, they pretty much realize that whoever they'll speak to, particularly civilians, will have no sense, no idea of what they experienced. And sadly and shockingly, all too often, the kinds of questions that come up are very coarse kinds of questions, often asking just out of the blue, well, did you kill anybody? Which, you know, would be a shocking question to ask in general, but specific to the soldier's mandate, the soldier's mission. There's no soldier that I've ever met or that I know of that would take any pleasure in having to be violent. And in fact, it's pretty hard to remove the Judeo-Christian value of preserving life, even with training. And so the type of reception that soldiers get all too often leads them to kind of isolate themselves or just to keep quiet or, in fact, not to relive some of the memories.
Would it be fair to say that some veterans are more open to talking to someone like yourself, a trained professional, than even a close loved one?
Well, for sure, because all too often they're wanting to protect their loved ones, those who are close to them, from some of the severe horror, in fact, of what they experienced. Or sometimes they feel that they're not justified in sharing that stuff, in what they may see as complaining, because it doesn't always translate easily. So yes, they're more comfortable talking to someone like myself, who's accumulated some years of experience, and I happen also to have a military background, which I'll often mention in passing, which reassures them that I'm kind of a member of the club.
I would assume that, because as you mentioned, one of the things people tend to ask of military personnel when they come home is, did you actually kill someone? And as coarse as that is, it almost seems like the natural question to ask, even if it's not politically correct. What would be some of the things that would surprise the general population when it comes to what some of these vets would want to talk about as far as their experience is concerned?
Well, they oftentimes want to talk about their feelings, because I can think of an example where one of my clients was ordered to shoot the enemy and did follow orders, but to this day, at least at this point, has serious regrets at having to do so. It's still taking a life. I can think of one fellow with whom I've worked, who is he's a real tough guy. He's you know, to me, the epitome of a military man. And he was asked by his physiotherapist this type of question: did you experience some really bad stuff over in Afghanistan? Actually, this was in Bosnia, this fellow decided to tell the physiotherapist exactly what he did experience. And it's actually a tale so horrible that I can't quite shake it from my mind. But the physiotherapist, I think, learned from that point on not to ask too many questions.
So for family and friends of someone who has come back from a war, be it a Canadian military or American military, or any military for that matter, what should people say and do when it comes to dealing with a vet, a loved one who's a vet?
Well, you know, I think, you know, my initial thought would be the same advice that I would give to someone who's wondering how to respond to anyone who's suffered a tragedy or serious loss. Oftentimes, less is more. I don't think there's any need to go out of your way to try to be overly comforting, or to... You know, oftentimes we're projecting our own anxiety and our own discomfort and our own fears in the questions or that we ask or in the way that we try to be helpful. It's really more of a reflection on our needs, and that's what's kind of bothersome. After a while, a veteran gets fed up with trying to deal with other people's anxiety. And so, again, I would say that eye contact, where appropriate, you know, physical touch can often be very, very reassuring. And simply to be there to listen rather than to push for information or try to be too helpful.
Through the generations, the name has changed from battle fatigue, shell shock, to now the initials PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. Has the situation of PTSD, what it's called now, changed over the years? Like I said, you've been doing this for over 30 years. Have you seen a difference in the types of situations that military personnel are dealing with when they come home?
Well, I think one interesting development, and yes, you know, I've studied the history of the perception of war-related stress injuries, you know, going back to the Boer War a century or so ago, and the term post-traumatic stress disorder, the trauma aspect, it kind of suggests incorrectly some kind of weakness or inability for someone to cope, when in fact we all have our ceiling. There's another term called operational stress syndrome, which just suggests that this was a stress reaction. It's not a question of someone not being able to deal or not having the strength or the moral fiber to cope. So operational stress syndrome is a kind of a lot less judgmental, and where that can be used, it is. But again, I think the important thing to stress is that everybody has their limit, and that if you're a veteran and you're troubled beyond an initial period of adjustment after returning, an initial period of adjustment of 2 or 3 months or so, it's important to realize it's not a reflection on you.
We have just about a minute. I just want to ask one quick question. But we're both roughly the same age. We grew up in the 60s. When we were kids, we would play with G.I. Joes. We'd go into some field and play war. The kids today, though, and subsequent adults, have video games, very graphic video games that are very, very popular, that deal with the theater of war. I'm just curious to know, do you hear from veterans about their feelings on those type of games, and do some of them even play them, even though they've been through that experience themselves?
Well, in fact, these types of programs are even used to help to desensitize post-traumatic stress disorder. There's new approaches in the last year or so where veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or operational stress syndrome are exposed to very realistic videos of war, of battle or war front situations and circumstances to help them to get over, to help to desensitize their stress reactions. And I think, however, that a lot of these video games do desensitize people to the real violence and horror of war.
Richard, it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you. How can people get in contact with you?
Well, I'd be very happy to have them contact me through telephone, which could be area code 514-378-1836. Or they'd be welcome to contact me through Google. It's Richard Rappaport, Rappoport. If I can be of any help to veterans or their families, it would be an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you very much, sir.
A pleasure, Peter.
Therapist Richard Rappaport. For links to finding Richard, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Just click on the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0124, and you'll find the information.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show. capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about Tribbles, all those cute little furry things that you remember from Star Trek. It's now available as a toy. Has been for a little while. And also, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, there is an idiot of the day coming your way. And lots more stuff, including right here, right now. Now, do you have change for a $1 million bill? Police say a North Carolina man insisted his $1 million note was real when he was buying $476 worth of items at a Walmart. Because, as you know on this show, everything happens at Walmart. Investigators say 53-year-old Michael Fuller tried to buy a vacuum cleaner, a microwave oven, and other items. Store employees called police after his insistence that the bill was legit and Fuller was arrested. The largest bill in circulation in the United States, by the way, is a $100 bill. The government stopped making bills of up to $10,000 way back in 1969. Fuller was charged with attempting to obtain property by false pretense and uttering a forged instrument. Okay, now I seriously gave consideration to making this guy the idiot of the day for two reasons. One, just the idea of handing over a $1 million bill. And two, was he really expecting change for a $476 purchase? But I didn't make him the idiot of the day. That's coming up later. Wait for it. Okay, a couple of stories coming out of Ontario. Having your foot run over by a shopping cart is not an emergency. A male shopper learned that recently. Police responded to a 911 call around 3 p.m. from a man in distress because he said a woman accidentally ran over his foot with a shopping cart and he required police assistance. Police said the woman promptly apologized for the mishap, but the man was unsatisfied with her apology and wanted an officer to speak with her. According to police, he refused medical care. Probably because there was nothing wrong with his foot. But anyway, police are reminding residents in the Barrie, Ontario area that 911 is a life and death emergency call only and that shoppers should operate their carts in a safe manner. Police should also remind morons with easily bruised egos to just simply chill. And this guy wasn't the only moron to call 911 for an idiotic reason, and indeed not the only one to do so in the province of Ontario. In case you were not sure, hamburger-eating cats, video game disputes, and not being allowed into a bar are also not emergencies. Those were just three of the many 911 calls made in the Chatham, Ontario area this year, or actually now last year, 2011. Chatham-Kent police have released their third annual list of the top 10 silly calls of the year in an effort to remind people to call 911 only if they need emergency assistance. Among them was one dispatchers received from a woman whose cats ate her hamburger. She wanted another one. Also not an emergency call was a couple's video game argument in which the man wanted to play Xbox and the woman wanted to play Nintendo Wii. Constable Michael Pierce says he suspects alcohol was a factor in some of the top 10 calls. That's pretty much a safe bet. Also the possibility that they're morons. Well, those obnoxious people at PETA are at it again. The animal rights group wants Illinois to install highway signs in memory of cattle killed when trucks hauling them flipped into separate wrecks. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Oh, is that what PETA stands for? I always thought it was People Eating Tasty Animals. Anyway, where was I? People, yes, for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has asked for permission to buy the markers, one in suburban Chicago and one northwest of Peoria. The group says the signs would pay tribute to the more than 20 cattle killed as a result of negligent driving this year. You know they were on their way to a slaughterhouse, right? Okay. Illinois Department of Transportation spokesperson Josh Kaufman says the request will likely be denied because, and this is the part I love, the state's Roadside Memorial Act specifies that only relatives who lost loved ones in highway crashes may request memorials. How they'll get the other cows to make that request is probably the battle PETA will try and figure out next. In 2006, Virginia also rejected PETA's request for highway markers to memorialize hogs killed in crashes on their way to slaughterhouse at Smithfield Foods. Ah, yes, PETA. We already have highway signs, by the way, PETA, in memorial to cattle. Yeah, they're called the Golden Arches. You see them along the highway quite often. Anyway, speaking of the Golden Arches, two people who pulled up at a McDonald's drive-thru in Western Illinois completely naked face public indecency charges. Police in Galesburg say a 19-year-old El Paso man and a 21-year-old Galesburg woman have been released from Knox County Jail after being ordered to appear in court to face the charges. The duo was still in the McDonald's parking lot when officers arrived just before 2 a.m., Police say the man was crouched over in the driver's seat trying to pull on a pair of pants while his passenger was covering up in a blanket. The pair told officers the late-night fast food run might not have been a great idea, but that they both still thought it was funny. Yeah. Isn't it kind of cold in Illinois to be driving anywhere naked? Anyway, remember, folks, when you're going out for hamburgers, make sure you cover your buns. Yes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Star Trek fans no doubt remember those fictional furry creatures called Tribbles. They were created more than 40 years ago by David Gerrold, who inspired the episode The Trouble with Tribbles. Well, a few years ago, they were made into a toy that you can find at TribbleToys.com. And on the line with us right now from California is Miles Reines, who distributes Tribbles. Hi, Miles.
How you doing?
Jess, tickety-boo, thanks for being on the show with us. We had a chance to talk a couple of years ago on my old radio show, I guess right around the time when you first started this, around July of 2009. So, how has this grown since we last had a chance to talk? How are Tribbles selling?
Tribbles, you know, Tribbles are Tribbles. They never stop growing. There's always more. We've released more breeds of Tribbles. We have 9 different breeds on our site. For those of people who have too many Tribbles, we've released Glommers. We're always looking to expand and have a good time with the best pet and toy.
I think one of the questions I asked you when I first spoke to you a couple of years ago was, the Trouble with Tribbles episode was, again, over 40 years ago. You would think in hindsight that something like a Tribble toy would have been available much sooner than when you came along with it.
You would think so, and I can't comment on what people did or didn't do before me. I know that the mechanisms we use, you know, the insides, people were always making little balls of fur, but up until recently, they weren't moving or shaking or purring like ours do.
Now, I understand, as I mentioned in the introduction, it was an episode written by David Gerald. I understand that you worked closely with David in putting together this venture.
Yes, absolutely. David and I make the tribbles happen and keep them out there for everybody.
Now, you say there are nine different tribbles?
We have nine different breeds right now. Our original assortment were the desert tribble, like a cinnamon color, a meadow tribble, which is like a cream color, a tundra tribble, which is a gray color, and a cave tribble, which is a dark brown color. Then we released 2 years ago the gas tribble, which is a genetically altered safe tribble seen in the Star Trek animated episode. It's all pink, and they're safe. If you've seen the animated episode that David himself wrote for the Star Trek animated series, you've seen them. And then this year, while exploring the tribble homeworld, we came across four new jungle breeds of tribbles, which kind of take on some earth jungle animals, a snake tribble, a cheetah tribble, a leopard tribble, and a tiger tribble.
I'm a major Star Trek fan myself, but I've never heard the term tribble homeworld before.
Everybody comes from somewhere,
I guess. Now, you mentioned
one of the Federation's biggest secrets, though, where it is, because, you know, we don't want everybody getting tribbles out, you know, and without the predators to keep them under control.
There you go.
Now, everybody knows what happened to tribbles.
Now, you say that yours move. So how exactly do they move?
Well, our large ones are old enough to, you know, listen to any loud noise or sound, and they'll start shaking and making their purring noise. The medium ones are like little kids, which they take like a little nudge or a slight smack to get their attention, to for them to shake and make their noise. And then we also have small ones, which are too young to do anything. And we also released some keychains this year, too.
Have you had the opportunity to come in contact with anyone from the Star Trek world? And by that, I mean any of the actors who played the characters who may have worked with tribbles in the past in the original series?
Every once in a while, I'll be at a show where there's one of the famous actors at. Unfortunately, the actors usually get so hit by so many people, they don't really get a chance to come around the vendors' tables. I do know that some of the people that will buy tribbles will then take them to the actors when they get their pictures taken with actors. We have a picture of a couple fans with William Shatner holding a tribble, one of our tribbles, which if everybody has any pictures of themselves with our tribbles, we put them on our website. We have a whole page of a lot of fans holding tribbles. It's a fun toy gift, little pet.
Now, again, when we first chatted a little over 2 years ago, this was just starting up. Do you or are you where you anticipated you would be 2 years later? Is it going great? Did anything change over the span of the 2 years, or anything you didn't expect, or just a different course for you for what you're doing with the tribbles?
It's always surprising. I mean, the latest thing we've done is I've started expanding some of the shows I personally go to in the anime arena of media, where the fans don't necessarily know classic Star Trek or Star Trek at all. But anybody who sees a vibrating, shaking ball of fur on a table, they start coming over, putting a tribble, and they're like pets that you don't have to worry about a litter box to clean it after. So everybody has a good time with tribbles, and that's how they move.
Now, the granddaddy of some of these shows is the big show that takes place, Comic-Con in San Diego, correct?
Oh, San Diego's, yes.
And I'm assuming that for the real hardcore Star Trek fans, that the first time you showed up at one of these events, it must have been like the second coming of the Beatles.
Well, in addition to San Diego Comic Con, we also do as many Star Trek shows as I can travel to and hit those. So, of course, we do Creation's big Grand Slam in Las Vegas every year. And Creation's been doing a phenomenal job in getting more and more fans there every year, growing bigger and bigger. And with all the population and Star Trek fans, Star Trek's not showing any signs of slowing down, moving forward, and people are still buying tribbles for themselves and having a good time with them.
And I know I asked you this question the last time you were on the program, but there are people who have found creative uses for their tribbles. Now, bearing in mind this is a family show, what are people doing with their tribbles?
Hopefully they're all smiling with their tribbles. I have had some strange comments from some shows I've done, and usually I keep my sense of humor quiet until at least the last day of the show so I don't get in too much trouble.
Now, if anybody has seen the classic episode with William Shatner, one thing you notice is at some point he's practically buried in tribbles. So it's not exactly a situation where you want just one. They're like Lay's potato chips. No one can stop at just one. So do you find people buy multiple tribbles?
That's one of the reasons we keep finding more and more breeds of tribbles. We have all the variety of sizes of tribbles. Because people do get more than one. They get them not for themselves, but for friends and family. It's funny to hear how many people will send an email after a show saying, oh, they picked this up for their niece, nephew, cousin, brother, sister, and by the time they got home, they're keeping their tribble, but they still have to get one for their niece, brother, cousin, nephew, whatever. So we also do internet sales. Tribbles are available that way, too.
How much do they sell for?
Our large ones are $20 each, U.S. dollars. Our medium ones are $15 each, U.S. dollars. And the small ones, or the keychain ones, are $4 each.
And do you find that you're getting a lot of interest in purchasing tribbles beyond the U.S.?
Yes. It's funny. When we spoke, my website wasn't quite up and running for international orders, unfortunately. Since then, we've gone through a couple different web guys, and my current one has got the international aspect of it working super good. So we're shipping all around the world, and their tribbles are slowly taking over the planet.
Okay, how many tribbles do you personally own, and where do you keep them?
Personally, I don't even know because I have so many different breeds and varieties that I've tested and seen, and they're all over the house, it seems like.
Do you have a cat, by the way?
Yeah, I do have two little fuzzballs of my own. And it's funny because people with cats, they always worry about the tribbles because some cats, you know, attack a tribble, some cats will hide from a tribble, some cats just, like my boys, they do nothing, you know. Unless it's food, they don't move from the bed at all, I don't think.
People can get their tribbles by going to the website, which is www.tribbletoys.com, correct?
Yes, that's the website.
Excellent. Miles, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you so much. And if anybody has any questions or anything, you can always email me direct, miles@tribbletoys.com, or go through our website at tribbletoys.com.
Miles Reines from tribbletoys.com. You can find links to their website at thestufffile.com. Just click on the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0124, and you'll find all the information. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Happy New Year! The holidays are such a beautiful time of year, I thought I'd start with some news from the art world. It could affect your favorite museum, and it's already affecting many dealers. The ability to certify that a painting was really done by someone famous, like Picasso, is critical to museums. Yet, an art newspaper is reporting that more experts are refusing to certify works of art today than ever before. They're getting out of the certification business because they're afraid they'll be sued. A group of experts that specialized in certifying works by Andy Warhol was sued after it decided not to authenticate a self-portrait. Even though the suit was eventually dropped, the experts couldn't afford the legal bills, and the group disbanded. Let's be fair, litigation over the validity of art is nothing new. Yet so many experts are now deciding to get out of this business in America that many in the art world are alarmed about the long-term impact. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the The Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabbie, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, in the city that never sleeps. Hello, Peter.
Hello, hello, live from the streets of New York, where I make the news very personal. It's a beautiful, cold day in a holiday festive season.
Which reminds me, I was taking a look at your website, Peter, and I noticed that there was an article about you driving Santa. What was that all about?
Well, it was a labor dispute. Here's what happened. Santa wanted the reindeer to do something or other, and the reindeer said they just weren't going to do it. Okay? I mean, it's a labor dispute. So that kind of left him kind of shorthanded, and he contacted the garage, and he asked, would it be possible for the Gabby Cabbie to take him around the world, you know, delivering toys to good children? And my bosses at the garage said, sure, there's no problem. We'll be able to do that, and they arranged for me. So I picked him up at the North Pole. We loaded up the yellow mobile conveyance lounge with toys, and we spent the entire night traveling around the world. We went to every country in the world. We had a little difficulty passing over North Korea. They started shooting at us until they found out, you know, who it was. And then we had some trouble over London. There was this old guy who started screaming, I don't care who you are, fat man in a red suit, get that yellow vehicle off my roof. But other than those two incidences, he distributed all the toys to the good children, and then we got back to the North Pole, and he's now going to be invoiced by the garage. It's going to come to about $26,000, and then there's an extra $1,000 charge for the magic dust. Now, people have said, well, what's the magic dust? Well, I mean, let's not be stupid about this. You can't drive a New York City cab all over the world unless you have some magic dust. So not only does he have to pay for the cab, he has to pay for the magic dust. Does that answer your question?
Answers my question. And on behalf of all the children around the world who receive their presents on Christmas, we would like to thank you for the work you've done this year.
Well, listen, I do the best I can. I try to help out in any way I can.
Okay. Now, I understand, getting back to your beautiful city of New York, that, and I never understood this, by the way, people who actually fall asleep on the subway, that can't be a good thing.
No, it isn't. It's very dangerous. You know, the city that never sleeps. The police department presented one of these statistic things to point out that even though crime is way down in New York City, in one particular area it isn't way down, and that's sleeping. Sleeping on the subway is a very dangerous thing. Now, you're not going to get killed. You know, that's a Hollywood thing. But you're going to get robbed because that's just terrific for a good pickpocket. What you do is you find somebody sleeping on the subway. If nobody else around, kind of, you sit next to the person. And lickety-split, you have the person's wallet inside your pocket. So a travel advisory from the Peter Anthony Holder Show is don't sleep on our subways. And that way you can keep your wallet in your pocket.
Okay. Now, living here where I am in Montreal, we don't allow, for sanitary reasons, that's what our city fathers say, food trucks. But you go to New York and you can find food trucks of all types. And I understand now there are vegan food trucks?
Yeah. And the reason I brought that subject up this week is because it's interesting. When I first started giving people tours of the city, or even when driving the cab, the question would come up as to where you're going to have lunch. And in the old days, they'd say, well, they're going to have a hamburger, they're going to have a cheeseburger. You know, it was no big deal, it was no complicated. Well, lately I have been faced with the problem that people want to eat only vegan, or they have a glucose something or other, or they have a lactate something or other, or they have a peanut something or other, or they're kosher something or other. So in other words, it's really become a problem for me to find out what the tourists or what the passenger want to eat. So now I got an additional thing. For vegans, now they'll be able at least to go to a vegan, and that's the vegetarian, by the way, in case anybody doesn't know or I'm pronouncing it erroneously. But, I mean, I happen to be giving a tour to some people right now, and actually when I get finished with you, that's one of the discussions we're going to have, and I'm going to have to find out what they can eat and what they can't eat.
Well, speaking of food, I understand that there's a restaurant that is being sued by the Rolex company, or they're being pursued by the Rolex company.
Now, is that a Swiss company or a French company?
I believe it's a Swiss company.
Okay, because you see, if I'm about to insult it, and I know you're in Montreal, I better be very careful with French jokes, right?
Yeah, but you know, the stuff file is all over the world, so go ahead.
Okay, they're stupid. What can I tell you? I mean, they're absolutely insane. I mean, if I was selling a shirt that said Rolex, or maybe some jewelry that said Rolex, or a ring that said Rolex, maybe then you could complain about the trademark use of the name. But this is a delicatessen in Brooklyn that is calling themselves the Rolex Delicatessen, and they sell like a pastrami sandwich or a corned beef sandwich. I don't think anybody going into that delicatessen seriously believes that that's a Rolex pastrami sandwich or a Rolex, you know, whatever. It's just crazy. I'm overwhelmed with it. So, but what? What do I know? Rolex didn't ask me. So those idiots are actually taking the delicatessen to court. And of course they're going to win, because how can a small guy who owns a small little store, you know, go up against a company like Rolex? And as a matter of fact, if you go to my website, which is Gabby.com this week, there's a picture of the Rolex delicatessen. And I want you all to hang it on the door of your refrigerator. And I want every one of your millions of listeners to order a pastrami sandwich from them as a protest against Rolex.
Well, you know, when they go to court against the folks at Rolex, Rolex, when it comes to going to court, is a lightweight compared to one very large American company that protects their trademark with the zeal I've never seen in any other company, and that is Disney. Don't put Disney on anything or any character on anything. They even went out here in Quebec. They went after a daycare center that had Disney characters painted on their wall. That's how far they go.
Oh, okay. That's the Disney company that makes all those dirty, filthy porno movies under a different name than Disney. I can't think of what the name it is, but I know it's a Disney company.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of tours, which you give all the time, sir, are you concerned about being replaced? Because I understand Gray Line is taking away the tour guides on their double-decker buses.
Yeah, what they're going to do is they're going to have, and a lot of other cities have. I mean, I remember when I was in Milan, how's that for name dropping? You get on the bus, and maybe you even have it in Montreal, and you listen through earphones, you know, and it's time to go off as you pass this and you pass that. So what the Gray Line is going to do right after the first of the year is that they're going to get rid of about 100 of these tour guides who, you know, give the speech usually, and they're going to replace it with headsets and what have you. Listen, that's the age of technology, so I guess there's nothing that you can do. As far as replacing me, I am irreplaceable because I am sophisticated, charming, urbane, handsome. I am the gab man, the wacky hacky, the last English-speaking cab driver, and I just... ooh, sex appeal.
There you go. And before we let you go, one little inside secret. Whenever I have you on the program, I don't just simply call you up and start talking with you. I call you in advance to set a time that we can chat so that I know we have the opportunity to do this little segment. And when I called you earlier to set this whole thing up, you actually asked me a question that was pertaining to someone that was in your cab. You want to repeat that question, please?
Well, you're a man of great courage, and of course a man of great color. I mean, I presume that most of your listeners are aware of the fact that you are, as we would quaintly say in the United States, a colored brother. Well, coincidentally, I had just taken the tourist who were two pasty white people from Australia, along with their pasty white kid whose name is Jake. You don't know about Jake now, but I can assure you someday Jake will be the most famous person in Australia because his Uncle Peter in New York is going to train him properly. But in any event, his wife, not Jake's wife because he's not married yet, the woman who's really attractive-looking blonde, as a matter of fact, while I'm sitting here in the car with her, even though her husband and kid are present, my palms are starting to sweat a little bit, but that's another story, said something to me about that black men, because we're driving through Harlem, are endowed, if you catch my drift.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to get censored or upset, but you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
Well, then what happens before I can hardly answer the question? You call me on the phone. I mean, how's that for magic? Some pasty white woman is asking me something about a black guy, and a black guy calls me on the phone. I mean, if that isn't karma, I don't know what is. So I said to you, because I'm not exactly bashful, what's the deal on that? And I think your answer, which I relate to her, is that you said that's a white lady's myth, which I think is just a fantastic. So there you are, boys and girls, men and women who are listening right now. You know that this is indeed, when you're dealing with Peter Anthony Holder's show, it's indeed a worldwide show with a cornucopia of information.
And you can tell that woman that when she gets her hotel, she should see if she can rent the movie Mandingo.
Okay, I will tell her all about that once we say goodbye.
Speaking of tours, people can always go to your website and find that information about tours. They can go to the website at www.gabby.com, and they can also email you at peter@gabby.com. I thank you very much for being on the program once again and wish you a very happy new year.
Thank you.
The Stuff File.
And we have time for a few more Stuff File news stories and, of course, the idiot of the day. Here's a little tip for you. Ambulances are not meant to be self-serve. In Tampa, Florida, Hubert Lee Credit, age 39, was arrested after he stole an ambulance and drove himself to the hospital for treatments for injuries from what Credit claims to have been an earlier altercation with four men. At around 10:30 p.m., TransCare Ambulance responded to a medical call. As ambulance personnel were responding to a patient, Credit started up the ambulance and began to drive off with the emergency lights activated. A GPS unit was able to track where the ambulance was heading. About 5 minutes after the incident began, police were able to stop the ambulance. Credit explained to police that he had gotten into an altercation earlier and needed medical attention, thus his reasoning for driving off in the ambulance toward the hospital. When Credit was arrested, there was a noticeable puncture wound to his head. Shortly thereafter, he was transported to Tampa General Hospital for treatment. I'm assuming he was taken by a different ambulance. Credit has been charged with auto burglary and grand theft auto. And in Birmingham, England, a soon-to-be centenarian, Claire Ormiston, shocked her friends and family when she let it be known that she was very interested in having a male stripper at her 100th birthday party. Apparently, a card from the Queen, which is standard practice in England when you turn 100, was just not enough. The good news is Mrs. Ormiston's wish came true when a male stripper, who calls himself Scorpion, paid her a visit at her 100th birthday party. She and fellow residents at the Glenfield residential home reportedly loved every second. Claire admitted, "I enjoyed that. It definitely put a smile on my face." Matron Barbara Hancock said the party was a bit different from the one she had imagined, which included a nice big cake and a classical music quartet. "Apparently, you're never too old for some steamy thoughts. You go, girl. You go." And it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
19-year-old Devontae Devon Jeter was one of four men in a car stopped in Midland, Pennsylvania by police back on May 13th. Now, the officer found marijuana in the car, but Jeter's defense attorney argued that the bag of pot could have belonged to any of the four men, and there's no way to prove it belonged to his client. Unfortunately for him, that argument kind of fell apart due to one simple question Jeter asked the arresting officer. That question was, "Can I have my weed back?" Yes. The prosecutor in the case told the judge, "I don't know what else 'can I have my weed back' could mean other than it's his." The judge agreed and ordered Jeter to stand trial on marijuana possession charges. Now, why would anybody, for any reason, ask a police officer if they could have their weed back, never mind the fact that you tried to deny it before a judge? Well, there's one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0124. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And by going to the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests on the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0124 for this week's show. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase us a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.